Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Eliana Johnson of National Review in for Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Eliana, it's great to have you with us. Thanks for being here.
Thanks so much, Greg. Good to be with you.
Well, as usual, we have good, bad, and crazy news for conservatives, and we start with a new Zogby poll in terms of the good news for conservatives. And the poll shows that three of the president's strongest constituency groups are not exactly thrilled with his performance. We're talking about blacks, Hispanics, and the young. If you look back at the percentage of the vote in 2012, Obama won 61% of the youth vote. Now only 46% approve of his job as president. Hispanics have fallen from 71 to 68, not much of a change there. And for blacks, 93% voted for him in 2012 and 84% support him now, so that's still pretty high. But the numbers show some dissatisfaction, and particularly, Eliana, among the young, which is a demographic I know the Republicans are really worried about.
The reason his support has fallen with the three groups is different with each one, as the poll suggests. But with Hispanics, he's in somewhat of a bind because congressional Democrats are telling him to please stay out of the immigration debate because it decreases their chances of getting a bill passed. His presence and his lobbying for passage of a bill, we've seen in particular Chuck Schumer saying, please stay out of this. And so I think nationally, Hispanics perceive him as not playing a big role. And if a bill doesn't pass, he will take a hit among Hispanics. But with African Americans and younger people, I think the economy is playing an enormous role. And the lagging economy is really hurting his support among both groups.
Eliana, as you look at this, it's one thing to not approve of his performance at a given moment and then later suggest that Democrats might not have the support of these groups going forward. In your mind, are those two totally different questions, or should Republicans be really hopeful about the fact that these numbers are heading in the direction they are?
They're not heading in a great direction necessarily. You still see he has 84% of African Americans supporting him and enormous majorities of Hispanics and young people supporting him. And I don't think we can count on, or conservatives can count on, these groups disliking whoever it is the Democrat is in office. They really need to take positive steps and positive efforts to connect with these groups. And that's going to mean policy changes and various communications efforts on the parts of Republicans. It can't just be Democrats screwing up or failing in terms of their promises.
And that's one of the things we saw from the RNC in the wake of 2012, a report that has gotten very mixed reviews, big time support for immigration reform, much along the lines of what we're seeing come out of the Senate. And a lot of conservatives don't like that. A toning down of the defense of traditional marriage was in there, as well as other grabbing onto more technologically advanced methods of communicating with young people. So there are a lot of different elements in there that young people and Hispanics might flock to, but whether it's good for the base of the party is another question as well.
You see a couple of different ways of connecting with groups that have been traditionally Democratic constituencies. One is the Gang of Eight approach, which says we need to reach out to these groups through legislation, comprehensive immigration reform, or various other measures. You know, you might put student loans in that group as well. And there's another approach, which I've written about this, but Rand Paul is doing it quite a bit, where he says, you know, conservatives and Republicans, they're not even showing up to talk to these groups. And so what he's doing, and he says he's on a speaking tour, is just showing up to speak to traditionally African-American universities, to Hispanic groups, to young people, and just bringing the Republican message to them. He faults Republicans for simply not doing that. And so I think those are two different approaches. They're not mutually exclusive at all, but we are seeing, I think, two different tacks among Republicans right now.
On to the bad martini now, Eliana, and this will come as a huge shock to a lot of people, and that's that it's possible the IRS has actually been harassing candidates and donors to those candidates for longer than we realize. It's not just going back to 2010 and some of these Tea Party organizations and going through those donor lists and auditing those people and giving those donor lists to rival organizations. But now the Washington Times is reporting that the Treasury's Inspector General for Tax Administration, J. Russell George, who probably has frequent sitting and testifying miles up there on Capitol Hill at this point from the latest scandal, says it actually goes all the way back to at least 2006, where different candidates and different donors have been overly scrutinized by the IRS, and there's really been no evidence to back up that extra scrutiny. It does not say that there's any conclusion in here whether there was a pattern with what political persuasion here, like there certainly was with the Tea Party IRS story. But what do you make of the fact that this goes deeper than we even realized?
What we know now, and what George has told Senator Grassley happened since 2006, is that there is corruption in a federal agency. I don't think that we should be surprised by this. George has identified four instances in which the tax information of either donors or political candidates was inappropriately disclosed. In one case, though, and I think this is what we should be focusing on, he says it was willfully disclosed, and then that action was not prosecuted by the Justice Department. He did not recommend it for prosecution, and the Justice Department agreed and did not prosecute the person who did that. I think you could make an argument that when people are willfully disclosing tax information against the law and that's not prosecuted, it does set an example or a precedent that could lead to the type of other actions we see. You know, 9 or 10 conservative groups had their tax information disclosed. And so I think that's a matter of great concern, though I don't think it should be necessarily shocking that mistakes or corruption are occurring in a federal agency. That doesn't mean that we shouldn't be taking action when it does occur.
How do you think this is going to play up on Capitol Hill when Democrats see that this happened during the Bush administration? Are they going to say, wow, there's a problem that covers the gamut here and we need to make sure this doesn't happen again? Or will they say, well, this happened on your watch too, so what just happened with the Tea Party isn't that big of a deal?
Oh, well, sure. I mean, I think we've seen this since the beginning of the IRS scandal where Democrats said, well, it was George W. Bush who appointed Doug Shulman, who was the IRS commissioner when the Tea Party targeting began. And then Elijah Cummings, the ranking member of the House Oversight Committee, has really been going out of his way to say that this investigation is a witch hunt and really doing his best to say that this is a unnecessarily partisan investigation. So I think on Thursday, which is when the next Oversight Committee hearing is, we're going to hear a lot of this, and the Inspector General is really going to be grilled by Democrats. They're going to be accusing him of engaging in a partisan investigation. I don't think that that is justified necessarily. I think you'll hear a lot of conservatives say, and I think rightfully so, that the bureaucracy just tends to lean left, regardless of who's in the White House.
On to martini number three now, Eliana, and I think this is the first time we've talked with a National Review person from New York City about the latest developments in the citywide races there this year. Most people were certainly aware for a while now that Anthony Weiner was emerging from his year or two in seclusion to run for New York City mayor, and of course last week Elliot Spitzer surprised a lot of people by announcing at the last second that he was going to get in the race for comptroller. Now there's a new poll out from Quinnipiac University showing that Elliot Spitzer apparently not only got his signatures in on time, but in a five-way race, he's almost at 50%, clobbering the guy who used to be the front runner in that race, Scott Stringer, 48-33, and then three others are well back of that. Anthony Weiner at 25% ahead of City Council Speaker Christine Quinn with 22%. So it looks like both of these guys with, let's just say, checkered pass, seem to be leading right now with a couple months left before the primary date. So as a conservative and as a resident of New York City, what do you make of all this?
Well, Greg, I'm from Minnesota, so don't pin these guys on me. But I'll claim Jesse Ventura over either one of these two guys. But I don't think there's any particularly original commentary on this. You know, you've heard a lot of people say that sex scandals aren't sticking with people in the post-Clinton era. And I think that's true. Just that people want to see candidates or politicians who have come into a sex scandal go away for a little while and they're fine if they come back. Bill Clinton did it to a certain degree. Spitzer did it, you know, a bit more than Weiner. I just think that these sorts of things aren't going to tar people in a post-Clinton era. And what you're seeing here is that name recognition is a whole lot more important than any sort of scandalous behavior or distasteful behavior a politician may have engaged in.
Even among women, as it turns out, in the comptroller race, Spitzer's ahead of Stringer 44-32 among women, and Anthony Weiner's only down to Christine Quinn by 2% among women. So hard to see exactly where there might be an opportunity for some of these people to make a comeback here. Eliana, right before we check out here, is there anybody in any of these major New York City races that conservatives have any reason to be encouraged about?
I don't think so. I think you're going to see Weiner and Spitzer ride to pretty easy, uncontested victories.
Well, that's encouraging. All right. Well, crime pays, I guess, at least in the case of Elliot Spitzer. In Anthony Weiner's case, horrific judgment, at least. Eliana, thanks so much for pinch hitting for Jim today. We'll talk to you later.
Thanks, Greg.
Eliana Johnson of National Review in for Jim Garrity today. Jim will be back on Wednesday. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today, and be sure to tune in again on Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.